Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. When President Obama appointed Ajit Pai to be a commissioner of the FCC, he certainly represented a measure of diversity on the commission. In opposition to Obama chairman Tom Wheeler, almost immediately, Ajit Pai was a gadfly, voting against the Wheeler net neutrality policies and against efforts to force consumer options and competition into the area of cable boxes. That record of opposition during his membership on the commission was a perfect resume, apparently, to become the new Trump FCC chairman. Here is Pai in a speech at the Freestanding Foundation in Washington, D.C. in early December, imagining himself as chairman.
During the Trump administration, we will shift from playing defense at the FCC to going on offense. And so to me, we need to fire up the proverbial weed whacker and start removing those rules that are holding back investment, innovation, and job creation.
Well, now he has the weed whacker. Chairman Pai has taken at least a dozen actions that would pull apart consumer protection rules. He's focused on rolling back internet and TV regulation, loosened the reins on exemptions on streaming services, and has disputed the idea that the internet is a public utility. Cecilia Kong is a tech policy reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Cecilia, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
Number one question, is net neutrality dead?
Net neutrality is not dead yet. Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, took a first swipe, though, at net neutrality rules by closing an investigation on what's known as zero rating. Zero rating is essentially the practice of letting your consumers stream as much as they want or download as much as they want and not counting that against their data limits, the limits that they have at each month. But the problem that the FCC found, the previous FCC found, was some of the wireless carriers, AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, who were providing this service, is that in the cases of some of them, they were actually allowing unlimited streaming for their own services. And so the question there was whether rivals or competitors were disadvantaged unfairly. And the previous FCC said there was a lot of evidence that there was some violations of net neutrality. What Ajit Pai did was he closed down that investigation. And that by doing that, that was seen as the first sign that he was going to fulfill the promises of taking that regulatory weed whacker and just wiping away a lot of the regulations from the Obama administration.
And then the question of common carrier, the idea that the internet is some sort of public utility in the tradition of other, you know, large-scale pieces of infrastructure in American history. He's against that as well?
He is. He is very clear and on the record many times that he thought that was a lousy idea for the FCC to declare that broadband, high-speed internet, was essentially like a telephone and should be regulated like a telephone, which is essentially regulated like a public utility, a common carrier service. And he has promised that he would, in some capacity, repeal that decision from 2 years ago. And he has lots of backing from members of Congress who want to help him do that.
Will this immediately pave the way for internet service providers to create rainbows of different pricing structures for different levels of broadband service speeds and the like?
All of the broadband carriers, the internet service providers, want to try these different kinds of models. They see sort of a way to make more revenue going forward by tiering their services in some way, by providing extra incentives to join like a premium service because there's zero rating or sponsored data, these things that allow, that look like deals for consumers, but create on the business side a whole stratification for how much you pay to this internet service provider to get your content or your services in front of consumers on the internet. So they've been waiting, the internet service providers, for this kind of an action so that they can really experiment with their business models.
Cecilia Kong is a tech policy reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
We now turn to Dr. Nicole Turner-Lee, a fellow at the Brookings Center for Technology Innovation. She says the U.S. government has been trying to address this for quite some time through the Lifeline program, a subsidy program born in the old phone company days of the 80s. As Lifeline has evolved, It has been the way broadband, internet, and other telecommunications services have also been made available to bridge the communication, now digital, divide. But as part of this new policy rollout last week, new chairman Pai blocked 9 companies from providing service to low-income families under Lifeline. And Dr. Turner Lee says the FCC may be tampering with a policy with lots of history.
It was a subsidy designed at that time after the baby bells broke up to provide citizens with access to telephone service, basic rotary dial-up.
But also 800 numbers, 900 numbers, the kinds of services that were suddenly being provided free in this new telecom era that was a far cry from the internet, but headed in that direction.
You got it. I mean, we didn't even know what the internet was back then in the 80s. I don't know about you, but I didn't have a sense that we would actually see this explosion of the internet. Later in the program, you know, subsequent years, Lifeline was able to be applied to mobile service. So we saw the subsidy actually transfer to people who wanted to have the ability to get cell phones or other mobile-enabled devices. Not yet broadband, but still the ability to pick up the phone and call somebody. Today, or this program, based on some rules that were put in place from the former commission under Chairman Tom Wheeler, now extends to broadband. And you and I know, as well as your listeners know, that without data, there's very limited functions that you could actually perform in the society. You can't find a job. It's hard to communicate with your healthcare providers. It's hard to apply for public benefits, you know, let alone for those of us that are not cost prohibitive, update your parking, right, in some of these cities.
Hey, Dr. Broadband. Nicole Turner Lee, if you're in an area where the broadband doesn't work, I mean, it's getting to the point where it's like there's no water in the kitchen.
Exactly. And that's an important takeaway because, again, with most people beginning to cut the cord on basic telephone service, they need access to the subsidy to be able to at least get onto broadband. So we're not talking about everyday people that can actually get onto this program. We're talking about people who have to qualify, that have to be eligible. They have to meet a certain income threshold. This is a means-tested program from the FCC, one of the only. They also, in the case of the reforms, can be associated with public benefit agencies, public benefit programs, whether it's food stamps, you know, in the case, I think veterans were approved as well to receive the subsidy. So what the chairman did that I think raised alert, and I want to give him some credit, so I'm going to be sure to be correct in my facts, is an announcement came out that he was cutting 9 providers from being what is considered eligible Lifeline broadband providers. And these were 9 companies that were primarily in the business of providing this service. So a little different from other companies that do other things. From my understanding, because I did go back and look at the particular order from the FCC, these were targeted Lifeline-serving companies, John, right?
How many people does it affect? Any idea?
You know, we're still trying to gather those facts. You know, the chairman has sort of indicated this is 9 out of 900 companies that were whose designation was reneged, 1%. But what's interesting, John, that I actually did find out about as I looked a little further, and I'm writing a paper on this at Brookings, in terms of the positioning of universal service to advance digital connectivity, these 9 companies, believe it or not, were approved just days before the chairman took office. So I would assume that we see a little bit of repeal and replace, or repeal and not replace, going on at the FCC with regards to why these companies were actually not provided with, or their designation was reversed. Apparently they were in the queue. They were approved prior to Tom Wheeler stepping down. According to the FCC, there was a need to renege their qualifying status so that they could review whether or not they were committing waste, fraud, and abuse.
So maybe there's a no growth issue here. They don't want to get any bigger. They may not roll back, but these 9 companies are out of the picture for the moment. Why not just create a situation where there's universal broadband access throughout the entire United States, like they do in Korea, like they do in some places in Europe, and then worry about the means testing and all these other programs that would direct money to low-income neighborhoods, but get the broadband working first?
Yeah, you know, I think that that's an important thing. And I was going to say about these companies, you know, they were touching tribal lands, people of color and others, which makes it more troubling because it points to what you're talking about, right? Why not get everybody access and then try to figure out the details later? Pretty much now, John, everybody does have access in some way or form, whether it's through a wired or wireline device. The challenge is, again, and I completely agree with where the FCC is going on this, we have to find ways to deploy it into areas where people don't have it. Rural is definitely one of those areas where we're still seeing a great gap when it comes to digital inclusion. And then there are certain urban areas, particularly when we're looking at mobile broadband, that we got to do a better job. I mean, we're on the cusp of the beginnings of 5G technologies, which is going to be far more faster than most of us that are in this 4G universe. But to your point, you still have to subsidize those that cannot afford it. And we've got to be careful, and Chairman Pai has to be careful, in this effort to provide this type of ubiquitous broadband, that he's not diminishing, you know, essentially what a Republican president put out, which is universal service access for people where they have limited income. So, John, it becomes harder because, one, you know, all of us have different tastes and consumption styles when it comes to service. Some of us use broadband for gaming. Some of us use it just to buy an airline ticket. Some of us have to use it for more vital purposes, which is to, you know, finish homework or apply for a job. The question is, you know, should we have the rich, you know, ride off the backs of the poor? Should we have the poor trying to find a way to get in so that they can actually use the bandwidth? And so I would just suggest, as this new commission comes forward, if they have digital divide at the center of their work, they've got to also have a public benefit or public interest standard, right, that allows us to take the conversation that you're talking about and make it real for the millions of Americans. Because as long as, you know, John, I know you know this, as long as people don't have access, they may not be able to stream your show, right?
Yeah.
There are things that they just can't do without having the ramp, on-ramp to a broadband connection.
Dr. Nicole Turner-Lee is a fellow at the Brookings Center for Technology Innovation and a contributor to TechTank. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.